Maine farmers adapt to a challenging season. When the pandemic hit in March, it was just about the time Maine farmers were planting their crops and starting seeds. As spring rolled in, much of their customer base, including restaurants and schools, shut their doors and stopped ordering Maine farm products. Then in June, most of the state got hit hard by a hard frost. At the same time, Maine experienced the longest dry spell since 1871. I'm Jennifer Rooks. It's been an extremely tough season for Maine farms, but farmers are resilient, and many are adapting to the challenges in creative ways, including selling directly to consumers. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss the 2020 season, how farmers will get through it, as well as lessons for the future. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. For farmers in Maine, the pandemic has meant a direct hit to their livelihoods. Today, we'll hear how Maine's agriculture sector is coping with the challenges of COVID-19, as well as an extremely dry season, and finding ways to reach consumers. Joining me, Amanda Beal. She is Commissioner of Maine's Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. And Sarah Alexander, Executive Director of the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, or MOFGA. As always, we want to hear from you. If you are a farmer, we want to hear how you've been doing. If you're a consumer, have you been finding ways to buy local farm products throughout the pandemic? Send an email, a brief email, to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Amanda, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us. And Amanda, I'm going to start with you. Almost every industry is being hit hard by the pandemic, but agriculture, it seems, has its unique set of problems between restaurants shutting down, schools shutting down, and now the drought. What are you hearing from farms across Maine? How can you characterize how tough of a season it is?
Yes, that's a great question, Jennifer. Thank you for asking it. It's a really tough season. I mean, if already dealing with a global pandemic wasn't enough, having a very, very dry start to the summer has been extremely difficult. But as far as the COVID-19 impact goes, what we're seeing is that it's not sort of a one-size-fits-all kind of an impact. There's definitely variation depending on what markets farmers are serving. So as you mentioned, restaurants and institutions for the farmers, that those are their predominant markets. It's been very difficult. We've seen a lot of challenges for potatoes and dairy, and definitely those commodity sectors have had a hard time with the disruptions in the marketplace for their products. And we've also seen, impact our maple producers, as their key events like the Maine Maple Sunday and many of our agricultural fairs have been canceled for the year. So their revenue has really not been what it needs to be. But then we have farms that actually have done very well, as you alluded to in the opening. We have just seen a real strong response from consumers who want to buy directly from farms. And so farmers that were already set up to sell through direct-to-consumer channels, or those that could pivot and change quickly and adapt and innovate, they have been able to take advantage of that as well. So some farms are having the busiest season they've ever had, and some are really struggling.
And we all read about the potatoes being dumped in Aroostook County. What are some of the, you mentioned some crops have been hit harder, some farms have been hit harder. Give us a sense of clearly the potato market hit hard. What else is like that?
Yeah, well, and I just spoke not too long ago with Don Flannery from the Maine Potato Board, and he said that it's hopeful that there aren't going to be as many potatoes dumped as originally thought. There have been some real efforts to try to purchase those potatoes. In fact, the Department of Corrections made a big purchase, and there are others who are looking at ways to get those potatoes into the emergency food system. We've been distributing some through our TFAP program. But yeah, again, like I said, dairy has really been impacted. For a little while there, some of our farms were having to dump milk, but that was happening nationally. And also nationally, it's interesting where you see that there have been some real challenges around meat processing, and that, of course, has translated to empty shelves in the grocery store from time to time. A lot of local meat producers, again, are seeing people seek them out and want to purchase their product. So it's really, you know, you can look at every single one of these different types of products, and there's a different story to tell here.
Sarah, I want to bring you into the conversation. What are you seeing among the smaller organic farmers that MOFCA works with? What are the biggest challenges, and what are the good stories right now?
Yeah, well, similar to what Amanda said, you know, I think every farm has a little bit of a different story, and it does depend on what crops they produce and where their markets are. So even amongst smaller farmers, we do have people that sell primarily to restaurants or to other institutional markets. And when the pandemic hit, they had to immediately overnight really figure out what their new sales strategy was going to be. So, you know, we have some farms that switched over to a community-supported agriculture model, and that's where individual consumers might purchase a share for the season and get a box of produce each week. We had some farms that switched over to online marketing and set up their basically all of their products in an online store where consumers could say what they wanted to purchase, go ahead and purchase that ahead of time in a contact-free manner, and then either arrange to pick that up on the farm or potentially at a farmer's market. So we've seen a lot of adaptation there. And we've really seen people get creative. So people who never had farm stands before set up farm stands for the first time and set up contact-free pickup, figured out new ways to package their products together. And then we've also seen a lot of collaboration. So many farms, especially in the organic farming community within MOFCA, we certify about 550 farming operations and food processing operations. And we have a real community of folks that collaborate together. And so some people that had farm stands started bringing in products from other farms that had lost their markets. So if somebody had, you know, cheese or meat or kale or strawberries or lettuce, you know, different things that they might not be able to sell on their own, they've partnered up with other farms so that they can sell those things together through their farm stands. But we've seen a lot of new and interesting ideas that have come out of the pandemic, and some people have been able to adapt quickly, and I think some people are still really trying to figure out what this is going to mean for their season and how they're going to make ends meet with their farm budgets.
Sarah, tell me about how the timing of the pandemic affected Maine farmers. The lockdown starting in March, isn't that when people are starting seeds indoors, most, for example, produce growers?
Yeah, and actually, we've really expanded our seasons here in Maine over the last, you know, 10 to 20 years. So we do have a lot of year-round growing. There were farms that had products that they were already selling when the pandemic hit. And then you're right, there were a lot of farms that had their seeds started. And so seeds were in the greenhouse waiting to be planted once the weather got warm enough. And so, again, it depended on the farm and where they were at in their crop planning. But you know, we didn't have a lot of fresh product in terms of vegetables in the scale of what was being sold in the spring. The height of our production season really is coming into the summer season right now. We're starting to see some of those summer vegetables. So the pandemic timing maybe was good in some ways that we weren't at the height of our season. However, I think a lot of people still had to adapt quickly. And so there were some farms, for example, who had started all our seedlings to plant on 5 acres of vegetable production and realized that they had to rethink their entire crop plan based on the farm labor that they were going to be able to have, or rather the lack of farm labor that they were going to be able to have on their farm for this season. And so they ended up selling off about 2 acres worth of those seedlings directly to consumers and gardeners and other folks who were interested in planting their own gardens this year instead of planting those seedlings on their own farm, just because they weren't going to be able to produce the same amount of crops that they would have maybe produced in a normal season. And so there's a lot of iterations like that where, depending on where the farm was at or what they were producing, they might have hit it just right and been able to adjust their plans, or they, you know, already had their plans kind of set for the season, and they're just really hoping for the best and hoping that consumers will come out and continue supporting purchasing directly from their farms.
Sarah, Commissioner Beal, Sarah mentioned farm labor. I want to ask you about that. In a typical season, how many people are coming into Maine to help out with farm labor? What is that going to look like this year? And what kind of precautions are being taken against COVID-19 spreading in the migrant workforce?
Yeah, that's a great question. We do have some types of products where, or some types of farms where labor coming in from outside the state and outside the country, that's really important to our workforce. And, there have been some challenges where in certain countries where folks would be coming from and need to be getting visas, just the places where they go to get those visas aren't open. But I think some of that's starting to work itself out. In terms of bringing people here to work and what does that look like and how do we keep them safe, we've been working with the Maine Migrant Health Organization to make sure that, one, testing will be readily available to farm workers and for farmers that host farm workers, and also, you know, just working on plans for how to really work with groups of folks in a farm setting, and, you know, coming up with strategies like if folks are housing together, having them work together and not having groups, you know, cross over so that there's some spacing, and of course, making sure that there's adequate personal protection equipment or PPE. And one of the things that we've done is we've worked with the Department of Corrections, actually. They have done a fantastic job of working with their inmates to produce face coverings, cloth face coverings, that we have been distributing for free to farmers and farm workers. So far, I think we've distributed close to 3,000 masks or face coverings, and we've done that actually in partnership with organizations like MOFCA and Cooperative Extension and CEI and the Farm Bureau and Maine Farmland Trust, and so we're really all trying to work together to make sure resources are getting out there. We've also distributed PPE to other types of food businesses. We're trying to be as proactive as we can to make sure that people have the information and the actual protective equipment that they need, and to make sure that testing will be available to farmers and farm workers.
And that's starting now with strawberries in season. We're already seeing a significant migrant workforce coming into Maine, correct?
Yes, correct. Yes.
All right. Sarah, I want to ask you I want to ask both of you over the course of the hour about potential silver linings. But is one, Sarah, that because people are hesitant to go to larger grocery stores, or some people have been hesitant throughout the pandemic, that more people are finding their local farms, turning to their local farms?
Yeah, we hope so. I mean, I think in a pre-pandemic world, people maybe were feeling a little less connected to our food system. And when folks started to see those empty store shelves back in March, I think the realization that we rely on food and it might be a good idea to know who's producing that food for us and how we can get it really set in for folks. And we saw a huge interest in trying to connect with local farms. I think we've all heard the story about the Cooperative Extension directory that was set up overnight with many farmers and agricultural service provider supporting, like Amanda mentioned, and then MOFCA. We've also seen a huge uptick in folks reaching out to us. We have our own organic directory on our website, and we've seen the website traffic double over the last few months as people have been seeking out those sources of where they can get local food. And we hear it from the farmers too. one farmer, you know, who's been around for a long time, said that their farm stand, they never saw their neighbors. They never saw very many people from their community coming, and they were really overjoyed to start seeing many of their local neighbors and local community members coming to the farm stand directly to get food from them and connect from them after the pandemic started. So we hope, and now that we're, you know, a few months into this, I think we have seen the consumer interest hold steady, and really that's what we want for the future. We want to have a vibrant local food system where we can have self-sufficiency here in Maine and be providing adequate, healthy, nutritious food for all Mainers with food that's produced here. And so, yes, hopefully that's the silver lining, that this will be the beginning of a much greater interest in how we support and how we grow our local food system so that more people can be getting local food.
Okay, on that note, we're going to go to Meg, who's calling in from Maine Farmland Trust. Hi, Meg. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you? Thanks
great.
For taking my call. It's been great hearing from Amanda and Sarah today. To connect to some of the points that they had made earlier, one of the things that we at Maine Farmland Trust have been hearing from farmers is that they're worried that the uptick in direct sales and the perceived increase in demand for local food will fall away as folks become more comfortable going back to large grocery stores. So in addition to working with farmers on infrastructure and some other needs that will hopefully make the food system more resilient in the future, MFT and other agricultural service providers like MOFCA and Cooperative Extension can really keep promoting the importance of local farms and highlighting all the ways that farms feed and support our communities. And one of the ways that MFT is hoping to rally consumers around local farms this summer is through our Maine Farm Scavenger Hunt, which aims to get people out safely exploring Maine's food and farm system, eating more local food, and learning more about the benefits that farms provide for our communities.
And Meg, I noticed that you've already posted something on the Maine Calling Facebook page. So if somebody wants
we
to
have,
know
yes.
more about the scavenger hunt, they can go there. Thanks so much for calling in and telling us about the Maine Farmland Trust, Maine Farms Scavenger Hunt. Amanda, I want to go back to something that Sarah said earlier. She was using the phrase a couple times, Maine's food system. Now, saying food system isn't the sexiest phrase in the world, but hasn't this pandemic and then the drought sort of laid bare the problem that has been bubbling under the surface for a long time in Maine is that there is not an adequate system to support the farms that are here. We see this when we have to dump milk or potatoes, that there are shortages in the grocery store, farmers have plenty, and when the regular supply chain falls apart, there's no way to get one to the other.
Yes, that's a great observation. This situation has really tested all of our systems, right? And what we've seen are that places where we all kind of had a sense that there might be weaknesses, it became very obvious where those weaknesses are and what happens when the system breaks down. The way I have been thinking about it, I feel like there's almost, more than one food system that run in parallel to one another sometimes in the state. Sometimes there are intersections, but I think we need to work harder at those at building more intersections and creating more opportunities for market access for Maine farmers to Maine people. And so really, when you think about it, 90% of the food that we consume here in the state comes in from out of the state. And then when you look around at all the food that's being produced here, we just need to do a better job of making sure that that farmers have, resilient access to markets, to consumers, and that we can make sure that it's just as easy to buy from a local farm as it is to go into the grocery store and purchase something from far away.
Do you think that this pandemic will help kind of force the issue and accelerate the change?
I think if we're if we're really paying attention and really thinking about what this means for the future, we really have to do this work. We really have to dig in and make some of the kind of changes that we know need to happen. I mean, this is about our food security. This is about, you know, supporting Maine farmers so that they're here for us when we need them, which is, you know, we really need them all the time. But making sure that consumers have a way to find farmers that they want to buy from directly and also to get Maine-grown products onto the store shelves. And one of the ways in which we're working on that is that we've been working for a while on a refresh of the old Get Real, Get Maine branding program at the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. And we launched at our trade show in January the refreshed brand, which is Real Maine. And coming, I think, within just a couple of weeks from now, actually, we're going to be launching a website for the Real Maine program, which is going to make it very easy to find those connections and to find farms that are selling things that you want to buy.
Whether you're a farmer or a consumer, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on our Facebook page. We'd love to have you take part in our conversation about farming in Maine during this crisis. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Evergreen Home Performance, a locally owned energy efficiency company grateful for and proud to support Maine Public Radio. More at evergreenyourhome.com. Hospice of Southern Maine, local, nonprofit, and independent for over 15 years. Learn more at hospiceofsouthernmaine.org. And Central Maine Moving and Storage, committed to providing an exceptional moving experience for Mainers moving in-state and beyond. movingmaine.com.
Tourism has been decimated by coronavirus closures, and the impact's been especially hard felt in areas that rely on seasonal dollars, like the Berkshires in western Massachusetts.
Who would have ever thought it would be a pandemic that would come along and really deal the main part of our economy this crushing blow?
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Tourist economy shut down this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And that's coming up this afternoon at 4 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. As Maine stands together to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic, Maine Public continues to celebrate the first 200 years of Maine's statehood. We're sharing historical information, interesting facts, and personal recollections, both by looking back at how this great state of Maine developed and also peering ahead for the next 200 years. All of our radio and television bicentennial programming can be found again, or for the first time, at mainepublic.org. The Maine State Bicentennial Hub link is under the radio, television, or education drop-downs. You can also find the links at mainepublic.org to our bicentennial partners, including the Maine State Archives, the Maine Historical Society, and the Maine State Bicentennial Commission.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, how Maine's agriculture sector is adapting to the pandemic. My guests are Sarah Alexander, who is Executive Director of MOFCA, and Commissioner Amanda Beal with the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. On the line with us now, Hannah Carter, who is Dean of the University of Maine Cooperative Extension. Thanks for calling in, Hannah.
Thank you so much for having me, Jennifer.
Sarah mentioned this earlier, but I want to expand on it a little bit. Early on in this pandemic, when everything shut down, the Cooperative Extension was part of a big effort to get Maine farmers' products directly to consumers. Tell us about what happened and how it's working.
I'd love to. And I already saw that somebody had posted the link to our directory on the Maine Calling website, and I so appreciate that. Again, this was early in March as things were shutting down. Allison Lakin, who is a cheesemaker down in southern Maine, had an idea of how was she going to sell her cheese when the restaurants have all shut down and what's going to happen, and had the wonderful inspiration of maybe there could be an online database and maybe others have an interest in doing that, because certainly a lot of folks were left with a lot of product and where is it going to go. And what she found was, again, online forums and how do you manage it and get the word out. So she connected with one of our extension staff members in southern Maine, Jason Lilly, and Jason said, we can help. And we had. And so We weren't in a massive online database kind of business, but we figured it out. We have some really dedicated, creative, and thoughtful staff that really worked on this. And so farmers could go on and pretty much just share what they had, share what safety guidelines, what safety protocols were in place. So you would already know, like, can I leave money in a box? Is it no contact? How are things going to be packaged? Those types of, that type of information. And it was actually, now, as you talk about positives in pandemics, it was kind of fun to watch this just blow up because we just started sharing it with our extension groups that we have connections with outside groups like MOFCA and others. And to date, I think we have over 468 locations that are on the map all over the state of Maine, which is, that was one of the things that I was most interested in, is there's really a wonderful geographic representation across the state. And this information is now about 2 weeks old, but about 2 weeks ago, they shared with me that we had now over a million page views of this directory, which, again, you just think about the sheer number of folks, and I believe it was already mentioned, you know, by Sarah, that, you know, people have reached out to me and said, you know, we've had folks that have come to our farm stand that, you know, we've never interacted before. And it's a really wonderful connection between local community members and their local farmers or local ag producers. And so it's been a great learning experience, and certainly I feel like it was one of those ways that really early on in this pandemic, Extension was able to just boots on the ground, roll up our sleeves, and figure out what we could do to help.
Well, you know, coincidentally, Allison Lakin is calling in. Hi, Allison. Thanks for calling into Maine Calling.
Hi. Well, how could I not join a conversation about agriculture?
And well, your ears must have been burning as you were waiting on hold and hearing Hannah talking about you. Allison, your little idea now, a million page views. Can you believe it?
I'm impressed. I have to say that the stories that I've been hearing back from people who have been having great impacts by customers finding them for the first time, and the stories about people having to extend their CSA shares, that's been very exciting.
Hannah, I want to ask you this. I noticed that the website was just updated, so I know you're continually taking new information about it. But I also noticed that, for example, in my own town, I know of farms that aren't even on this site yet. So what would you tell a farmer who's not a part of your guide yet? How did they get involved? I'll let Hannah answer.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I would just say we will post the website. I know you have a link to the website, but we'll post also on the Maine Calling website possibly the link that farmers can go in and actually submit their own information. And so that's, and Allison probably could speak to this early on, is how did you just let people know to say, all right, I can go to this website? And what we have really enjoyed about it, people can go on and continuously update their information. And that's been key, too, to make sure that the information that is being provided is actually current and what people are looking for.
And Allison, what did you want to add?
Two things. One, it is so easy to sign up, and how often do you get offered free advertising? And then the other side of that is the direct impact on my business, which has actually been pretty small. We are still very much struggling at East 40 Farm. So again, I'm trying to create something good out of this, and I've started a farmers market called the Long Cove Farmers Market. It starts next Monday. We've got 7 other farms who will be joining us as a way of, again, increasing all of our sales, because this is a great way to raise visibility for local producers.
All right. Well, Allison, I want to let you know that also on the Maine Calling Facebook page, there's information about the Maine Farm and Seafoods Product Directory. And I invite you, Allison, to post information about your brand new farmers market as well. Thanks so much for calling in and joining us. And Hannah Carter with UMaine Cooperative Extension, before we let you go, let me ask you, what is the silver lining in all this? Do you think that there's some good that will come out of this for Maine farmers and consumers?
Absolutely. And I just want to address, I believe Amanda and Sarah mentioned this as well. Certainly this whole pandemic has really shown where there are gaps, where there are areas that just whether it was infrastructure or processing, certainly areas that we need to work on. And I feel like because of this crisis, I feel like more conversations are happening between the groups that really need to make change and address some of these gaps and address some of these issues that have arisen. And so one of the really great things was, again, early on, Amanda and the department started an ag service provider call, a weekly call, and it just let everybody get on the phone to share, here's what the questions are that we're getting, here's information that we have that we can share. And as I like to say, we kind of triage things like, oh, extension can take care of that, you know, the department can take care of that, or maybe we need other information to come from other areas. And so I feel those conversations are going to continue, and I feel like we're all inspired to think about long-term solutions to some of these areas that have already been discussed. The other thing that I think of truly is the positive, and this has been mentioned before, is Maine has a wonderful brand in itself, and our ag products are second to none. And I think when you put those together, we have some real opportunities to really think about, whether it's internal to the state or external to the state, the products that we grow here are second to none. And again, how are we going to brand those? How are we going to market those? And really, I think, increase our capacity to grow things and to meet more consumer demand.
Well, Hannah, thank you so much for calling in. Hannah Carter is the Dean of the UMaine Cooperative Extension. We're going to move on to Ellis, who's calling from Whitefield. Hi, Ellis. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. This is a really important subject. I have a friend who's been farming for 35 years, and he has to decide tomorrow whether he can continue or not because of the J-1 visa program being canceled by the federal government. Without these young people coming over here and helping him, he cannot find labor here in the state to see him through. And I think it's very important that that at all levels to find adequate help.
So. I want to let you respond, Amanda.
Yes, if I could, that'd be great. Thank you, Ellis. It's a heartbreaking story. It's always hard for me to hear about farmers who are struggling. I come from a farming family, and the struggle is very, very real to me. But what I wanted to say is that recognizing that there are gaps in labor, in farm labor, and they're always, this has been sort of an ongoing challenge, but it's really been exacerbated by COVID-19. We partnered recently with the Department of Labor, and we have put together a Farming for Maine campaign, a labor campaign that we just launched a week or two ago. And we're really trying to help get the word out that, you know, there are jobs on farms in our communities, and there are farmers that need labor. And so for anybody who is looking for work, looking for really meaningful work, that's a great place to be looking. And so you can actually look up the Farming for Maine hashtag, and or if you want to contact us at the department, we'd be happy to connect you with those materials. But just really want to put a plug in for jobs on farms, really important at this time and always.
Ellis, thank you so much for your call, and good luck to your friend. We're going to move to Margaret calling from Orland. Hi, Margaret. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, I was just thinking another silver lining that should be upheld about this terrible pandemic is the fact that we are learning and recognizing and discovering our wonderful local farms. And therefore, maybe we will be less of a market for food from being trucked here and shipped here from all over the world and burning up all those fossil fuels and doing a job on our climate. So let's remember that as well.
Margaret, thanks for your call. Sarah, I bet you agree.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are so many benefits to local food, and specifically food that's produced organically has less of a footprint on the environment. It doesn't use any toxic chemicals or pesticides, and organic farming methods by themselves can help sequester carbon and help address climate change. And there's a public health benefit, too. When we eat locally produced food, it hasn't had to travel as far as Margaret mentioned, so we're saving those fossil fuels and those climate impacts. But it also has a higher nutritional content because it hasn't been picked, you know, early potentially. It hasn't been sitting on a truck for days or in storage for days when it starts to lose those nutrients and vitamins and minerals that are critical to our health. And as we come out of this pandemic, hopefully, you know, we have a renewed interest in our public health as well. And the foundation of that is having a high quality, nutrient dense diet. And we can produce that here in Maine with the farms that we have. And so hopefully more folks will tap into that and take advantage of that.
All right. Thanks so much for calling in, Margaret. Before we go to a break, I want to read this message. This is from Tanya and Adam at Skyfall Flowers. They write, "We are a certified organic farm that grows specialty cut flowers. It was a true challenge in the beginning, wondering if farmers markets were going to open. Once the markets opened, it has been a wonderful welcome from customers wanting fresh flowers, gorgeous colors, and floral scents that make us feel good in these challenging times. Our farm had to cancel workshops at the farm, and weddings have been delayed, so we are very thankful for the open-air farmers markets that have opened up for the season." On that note, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions about Maine's farms during this pandemic. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Breakwater in Portland, offering summer day camp programs for kids ages 3 to 18. Registration at enrichment.breakwaterlearning.org. And Maine Community Foundation, working with donors to expedite funding to nonprofits in this unprecedented time. Learn more at mainecf.org. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
Captain Lemuel Moody, constructor and keeper of the Portland Observatory, was born in Portland on June 30, 1767. Moody built the observatory in 1807 and manned it from 1807 to 1846. The Portland Observatory is the only known surviving tower of its type in the United States. Using both a telescope and signal flags, two-way communication between ship and shore was possible several hours before an incoming vessel reached the docks. The tower was designated a National Historic Landmark in 2006.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Marshall Communications. Happy birthday, Maine!
Hello, I'm Philip Yun, host of World Affairs. Communities around the world are starting to reopen, but if they can't contain COVID-19, they won't be open for very long. On this week's episode, we take a closer look at testing, contact tracing, and the struggle to reopen. And Nobel Prize-winning economist Paul Romer makes the case for testing every American for the coronavirus.
And that's coming up this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling, and we are talking about Maine farmers, how they've been adapting to challenges and the outlook for the future. Joining me is Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry Commissioner Amanda Beal and Executive Director of MOFCA, Sarah Alexander. You can call our conversation, join our conversation by calling 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post on our Facebook page. Amanda, before we go back to calls, though, I want to talk to you a little bit about government aid. Just saw a news release from Senator Collins' office this morning about the number $7.75 million, the Corona Food Assistance Program help. But when you look at the numbers more closely, it seems as though almost 90% of it to dairy farmers, and that other farmers don't seem to be getting much federal help. Am I reading this correctly?
Yes, you are reading it correctly. And part of the reason for that is that when the last aid package was passed, it was really targeted to this sort of January to April timeline, and it was meant to support farmers who had experienced losses during that time. And so, as we talked about seasonality earlier, and when our growing season really ramps up, a lot of our farmers didn't even have, you know, product in the ground at that point in time. So it's the, you know, the dairy farmers who are year-round in production. Potato farmers may be able to benefit from some of that funding as well. But to a large degree, many of our farmers have not and will not benefit from the federal aid programs that have been rolled out thus far. So we've been really advocating and working with our all four congressional offices. They've been incredible partners in this to be vocal about the fact that we aren't seeing the kind of benefit that we need to see for our farmers. And one good example of that was actually the governor and I had a conversation with several emergency food providers back in April, and really we're hearing what the challenges were there. And so the governor wrote a letter to the USDA saying that, you know, we really needed them to take a lead on making sure that there's enough food available to emergency food providers and pantries so that the growing number of folks who are food insecure can get access to that food. And the program that was rolled out, one of the elements of that was called the Family Food Box Program, where the idea was that they would select contractors to create these food boxes with farm product, and that would go out to the folks who needed it. And in the first round of that, nobody in Maine was awarded a contract, and so essentially we were going to be totally underserved with this program. And so I wrote another letter, and all four congressional offices wrote their own letter and signed onto a letter. And just recently, they opened it back up, and now Native Maine is actually going to be able to supply these food boxes. And so that was a big push, but we have to keep doing things like that to make sure that our needs, our unique needs, are being met here.
Joining us now, Jenny Tilton. Sarah, I want to have Jenny Tilton Flood join us. She's a dairy farmer with Flood Brothers Farm in Clinton. Thanks for calling in, Jenny.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Tell me, as a dairy farmer, what challenges or opportunities you see that are different from other types of farms in Maine?
Well, I think a lot of those challenges and the opportunities have been laid out very well by all these wonderful leaders on the phone so far today. But, you know, dairy farming is year-round, day-to-day, and we are running our farms and our homes usually simultaneously and in the same spot. And so the challenges that everyone else faced in the early days of the pandemic and crises were the same challenges we were facing while still having to provide that care and that stewardship, not just of our land and our animals, but also of our family and our coworkers and the people that we depend upon and still meet the high quality and standards that we're expected to do to put food on the table of our neighbors. And so just making sure that we had access to paper products, to disinfectants, to all these things that have become so important to making sure we stay healthy and serve our communities on a day-to-day basis became an even larger percentage of our role as we are striving to make sure we put that good, wholesome, nutritious product on our neighbors' tables. And it's really important. And I think that that's one of the biggest learnings for us as we've moved through this, is that all this talk about resilient food systems and local purchasing and local production and processing and the inputs and the outputs being within the state of Maine, we have that model right here, and that is dairy. Dairy is doing that for Maine.
What have you found are some adaptations that you or other dairy farms have had to make during the pandemic?
Well, we've had to make understand that we can't be friendly like we usually are. We can't sit and have a chat close to each other anymore. So we've lost a little bit of our connection. We are a little more isolated than a lot of people. There's around 205 family dairy farms here in the state of Maine, and And we generally are off on our own, but it's been a little bit more disconnected. So depending more upon Zoom has been something that's been very important. Cooperative Extension has been incredibly good at adapting quickly to help make sure that farmers feel connected, whether we're dairy farmers or we're produce producers. And so having Zoom calls early on and carrying them on through the past few months, that connection and the agility that the department and the Bureau has shown has been so wonderful. Agencies and organizations like Maine Farmland Trust and MOSCA, being able to come together and find ways to find solutions to anticipated problems, and making sure that our producers, whether we're producing dairy or we're raising potatoes or we're raising flowers, making sure that we knew that someone had our back. And as much as we kept telling our consumers and our neighbors and our communities that we're in this together, we actually felt like we really were.
Well, Jenny, thanks so much for calling in. That's Jenny Tilton Flood with Flood Brothers Farm in Clinton. Going to a question here from Nick. An email, why are there waiting lists as long as 6 months to have animals processed in Maine? There should be more capacity. Amanda.
I agree. That's a great, great observation. There definitely, we need more capacity. I think we touched on this earlier that, you know, one of the real bottlenecks that we have in the state is our lack of processing infrastructure. And that's for meat, and that goes for other products as well. And I think that's something that, you know, I know Sarah at MOFCA and others we're all really committed to trying to work on that going forward. We recognize that. And one of the things that we've tried to do to help relieve that bottleneck is we're actually doing a pilot project with a few different custom meat processors. So the custom meat processors generally are processing animals for individual or family consumption. It's not meat that's for sale. But we're working with three who we think have the capacity to be state inspected and have given them sort of 90-day temporary licenses to operate under that program so that they can now process meat that can be for sale as well. But yes, we absolutely have to work on building out our processing infrastructure in the state for meat and other products.
All right, we're going to go to AMK, who's calling from Gorham. Hi, AMK. We're tight on time, so if you can be quick, that would be great.
Of course, thank you. My question is, do we have the capacity with the farms in the state of Maine to feed everybody in the state of Maine should we ever have to shut off the supply chain?
Sarah, I'm going to go to you with this.
Yeah, I don't know if we have the data that we need to answer that question. I think that we know that we have fed our population historically in Maine, but we've lost a lot of farms over the last 100 years. And so we need to look at what is the infrastructure we need, what amount of food do we need to produce both for Mainers and regionally, and how can we work on a collective plan for how we can increase farmers and get that food to the folks that need it.
And Jennifer, can I jump in here?
Yeah.
Real quick. So a few years back, I actually worked with a group of researchers, and we put together a document. It's called a New England Food Vision, and we really looked at the land base and our resource base and population. Looked at it regionally, however, as New England as a region. And we determined that, you know, pretty reasonably, we could be growing as a region 50% of the food that we consume. We could do more than that if we needed to. But, you know, there are a lot of things that have to come into line in order for that to happen. But from a resource-based perspective, we do have the capacity to grow a lot more food for ourselves and for the region.
All right. We're going to go to Julie Marie Bickford, who's calling in from the Maine Dairy Industry Association. Julie Marie, I'm so glad you called in, but we are very tight on time. Go ahead.
No problem. Jenny and Amanda did a nice job explaining the dynamics of the dairy industry. And I just wanted to say that, you know, so far dairy farmers have been able to draw down a fair amount of the federal money, partly because, as was said, they were actually producing food during the time period it was available. But also, a lot of folks worked very, very hard, both at the state and federal government levels, to make sure that dairy farmers had the tools that they needed, because this is the most expensive time of year. And for the prices that dairy farmers were going to receive, they were so very low that there was no way farmers were going to be able to survive unless we could get them this relief. So it's been a great coordinated effort.
Julie, thanks for calling in and adding that to the conversation. I know that, Sarah, you wanted to talk about, you know, even though there are silver linings in this story, that this is still a very difficult time for Maine farms. You wanted to, I'll use the phrase, get real about that.
Yeah, I don't want to diminish that many farmers are struggling right now and they have lost markets, as well as many have an increased cost of production. Jenny mentioned this on needing to buy more PPE and sanitizer, and farms are having to increase the amount of packaging, and you know, all of these changes that they've had to put in place to adapt have cost them money, and that is further narrowing the, you know, the already slim margins that most farms have. So in order to make sure that our farms are going to survive this, we really do need consumers to step up and continue to support farms throughout the season. And, you know, we're going to work with Amanda and all of our other ag service providers and our congressional delegation to make sure that those federal programs and state programs are going to be able to help farmers of all sizes as well, to ensure that they get the support and the help that they need.
All right, we're going to go to Lawton in Penobscot as our final call. Lawton, if you can be quick, that'd be wonderful. Thank you.
I will. I really appreciate the show. Everybody on here, everybody's organization has helped me over the last 30 years as a small farmer in North Penobscot. But I just wanted to ask the commissioner, is it possible in the future, I know it can't be for this year, that we could look to countries who have robust public health programs like Thailand to get workers from places where, you know, they had low virus cases? And the other thing is, can we do more for schools, in schools like with the Farm to Ag program, where we could get kids early, like in elementary school, maybe having fun haying or collecting eggs? Because that's, we've got to build the workforce. And thank you so much.
Amanda.
Yeah, I thank you so much. Those are both great. I mean, great suggestion about, you know, looking at opportunities for where workers come from, and we'll definitely take that note. And as far as doing more with schools, I wholeheartedly agree. It's really been wonderful to watch the growth of the Maine School Garden Network and, you know, the whole farm to school movement in schools. And I think there's a lot of really great work going on in schools, and it's just, you know, there's opportunity to magnify that, and I think there's a lot of energy to do that as well.
All right. And Sarah, very quickly, what are you looking forward to eating this summer?
Well, I'm really enjoying strawberries right now, and I can't wait for tomato season.
And what about you, Amanda?
Oh, I love my herb garden. It makes me really happy to just be able to go out and snip green things and throw it in whatever I'm eating. So I'll be enjoying that all summer long.
Well, thank you both for joining us here today. Our guests were Amanda Beal, who's Commissioner of Maine's Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry, and Sarah Alexander, Executive Director of the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, or MOFCA. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. All sorts of links you heard mentioned today on this program will be on the Maine Calling website. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.